Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the Orange County Animal Care Community Outreach Committee for Wednesday, January 28th. We'll now proceed to the agenda for today's meeting. The agenda contains a brief description of each item to be considered, and except as otherwise provided by law, no action can be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. As a reminder, public comments must pertain to the subject matter jurisdiction of this advisory committee, and any disruption of the committee's ability to conduct its business will not be tolerated. So, Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Dr. Leslie Malo?
Present.
Kim Kane?
Here.
Elizabeth Cowan?
Here.
Vice Chair, we have a quorum, and I'd like to announce some housekeeping items before we begin.
Okay.
Please note that if a quorum is lost due to members leaving early or other reasons, the Vice Chair shall promptly end the meeting. If you wish to comment on a specific agenda item, please complete a speaker request form identifying the item number, your name, and submit it to the clerk prior to the calling of the item you want to comment on. To speak on a matter not appearing on the agenda but under the jurisdiction of the OC Animal Care Community Outreach Committee, you may do so during the public comment portion of the meeting, which we have returned to the end of the agenda. Speaker request forms must be submitted to the clerk prior to the beginning of the consent calendar, the reading of each individual agenda item, or the beginning of the public comments portion as applicable. When your name is called, please come to the podium and begin your comments by stating your name or pseudonym for the record. Members of the public desiring to speak should address all remarks and questions to the advisory committee. Speakers may address the advisory committee up to three occasions with 3 minutes allotted to the speaker per occasion.
All right. We will now move to the next item on the agenda. Item three, approval of minutes. Clerk, are there any members of the public requesting to speak on this item?
No.
Okay. I would then entertain a motion to approve agenda item three.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Malo and seconded by Kane. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any oppositions or abstentions? Okay. Next, we will move to the agenda item regular business, item number one, public education program report. Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on this item?
No.
No. I will have Jonathan, and this is a new name to me, so welcome, present the public education program report.
Thank you. Jonathan Volsky, the new public information officer. Excited to be here and help amplify the great work being done. And proud to be here today and talk about our outreach throughout the past quarter. So with the holidays, we know that is people are more at home with their animals, there's more food around, there's more people. So as you see there through our public education, we posted on our social media and through our e-newsletter several things about how to keep your pets safe during the holidays, what you can feed them, what you can't feed them. And then of course with New Year's Eve, we posted to prevent animals from being traumatized by the fireworks and getting out. Our Facebook and our Instagram continue to grow. We added 313 new followers to Facebook, which takes us up to about 32,000 followers. Instagram, we're seeing tremendous success there. We added more than 1,000 new followers. We're at 21,000 followers, but we also had 972,000 views. So we're really looking at cracking the million there. And that, of course, is very important because it gets people aware of the shelter and they come in looking for adoptable pets. We continued our promotions and themed them to each of the holidays and had good success with those. And actually, one of our holiday events was the Santa Paws that we put on social media. And that was our most popular social media promotion, and it also was great to pair it with a great event here. Some other things that happened with us is the Karen Cooper Foundation, which is based in La Jolla, brought 5 bags of toys up for animals. They donate to shelters throughout Southern California. So we're happy to have a little ceremony, accept those, and that was really fun to see the animals enjoying the new toys throughout the holidays. And of course, that helps with the adoptability as well, as the dogs are content and engaged. And then a new program the City of Huntington Beach has invited us to participate in is we take an adoptable dog, and we took 2 dogs to the last meeting, to to the second council meeting of each month in the city of Huntington Beach. And their meetings are well attended. They're streamed on Huntington Beach TV. They're on social media streamed as well. So we've taken a total of 3 dogs in the last 2 months to the city of Huntington Beach council meetings. We get to introduce them a little bit, speak just a little bit about the dog and the shelter. But I'm happy to report that 2 of those 3 dogs are now have been placed since they were there. So we find that program to be successful. We're looking forward to continuing and perhaps expanding. So that will conclude my report. Thank you.
I have just a question on that.
Yes, ma'am.
So they were adopted or placed. Anybody say, hey, that's my dog?
No, we didn't get any anything like that, but we do know one was placed in Huntington Beach, and the first dogs we've taken, we worked with Sam to find the appropriate candidates. They're from Huntington Beach, so we can kind of tie on to getting that dog back home to somewhere they're familiar, but no one has claimed it as one of their dogs.
Okay, great. That sounds like a great program.
Yes.
Any other comments, questions?
Is there any way to get the same program with other municipalities, maybe?
We're certainly interested in expanding it and reaching out. We'll reach out after we work with our new, we have a new communications manager as well, Denise Levent. So we'll work about how to contact cities and see if we can do that. But absolutely, it's good on both levels. It gets the dogs out, which is good for them, and then it exposes the shelter and those animals.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
I would entertain...
Before we have a motion, Alex has a second half of community outreach for the event side. We do it every time with the two speakers.
Okay, sorry.
I'll throw it off to you next time.
Thank you, everybody. Good to see everyone. My name is Alex Su, and I will be going over the community events and partnerships that we had this quarter. Another successful quarter being out in the community. We did participate in the Anaheim Mobile Family Resources events this quarter, where we were out in the community of Anaheim, speaking to members of the community, handing out pet tags, and talking about responsible pet ownership. We did have an opportunity to participate in several other events throughout our community to spread the word about, again, responsible pet ownership, our shelter programs that we have going on, our volunteer and foster opportunities. It's a way for us to be grassroots and out in the community. Sometimes people aren't on social media, and they get to interact with our staff members and our volunteers right in the community, get their questions answered, hopefully get to adopt a pet as we bring some of those adoptable pets off-site and into the community. This quarter, we went to the Subaru Orange Coast, where they hosted an adoption event, where we got to showcase several of our available dogs. And we also participated in the Pet Adoption Expo, hosted by First District Supervisor Janet Nguyen. We were able to share our resources and seek potential new fosters and adopters. At that event, we were able to find forever homes for 3 of the dogs that we brought and 2 cats. So that was very exciting to see. And we also attended a PetSmart store event in the city of Santa Ana, where we showcased 3 of our shelter dogs and was able to place 1 of them into their forever home. And then we continue to host RKD Cares this quarter. Those events gain anywhere from 50 to 75 attendees, those attendees being our younger generation. So it's very empowering for us to be able to show the younger generation about pet ownership and what it means to own a pet and the responsibilities that come with that, to be able to build up our younger generation to be those pet owners for the future. We successfully participated this quarter in 20 community events. I just wanted to highlight a few of the other events. We were in Cyprus at the Cyprus Community Festival that they have. We also participated in the Senior Summit Resource Fair Summit, the event sponsored by Supervisor Katrina Foley. And then we also did Dog Days at Tustin Library, so kind of near our neighborhood here. And then we were also over at the Rossmore Community Resources Forum in the city of Rossmore. And we continue to host our pet food pantry every second Saturday of the month. This quarter, we had 95 volunteers support from various community groups, this quarter, it was our biggest pantry quarter to date with over 71,865 pounds of food to help feed 3,353 animals. And that's kind of on par with sometimes with this last quarter of the year. It's the holiday season as well. People are able to be in the giving spirit, and there's still always animals and families in need. So we're very grateful that we have that part, that support from the community to be able to support those pets and those owners. The donors this past quarter were from various companies to Petco, to Irvine Animal Care, and also individual donors that helped contribute to our pantry.
I have a question on the listing here of the 20 community events. You have two that were sponsored by the county supervisors. Do the other offices ever contact us and do any outreach with animal care?
They do. The previous quarter, we were at a senior summit that Chairman Chafee's office had sponsored, and their team invited us to. This coming, I don't know if it's going to fall in this quarter or next quarter, but we were recently invited by the 2nd District for event that they're hosting that is not animal related, but it's more community resource driven. And so we do hear from the majority of the offices when they're putting on certain events that would make sense for us to be there.
All right, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Any other questions for our staff?
And I just want to add one thing to just expand upon some of what Alex shared. In relation to the Anaheim Resource Fairs, especially in addition to some of the other events we're at, now that we have rekindled the partnership with Tales That Teach, it's really nice having those books, and we see that they're really popular. They're donating free responsible pet ownership and humane education books for children. In addition, they also give us activity books, and currently they're able to give us those in both English and Spanish. And so when we are at resource fairs, like the ones in Anaheim, it's really great having that bilingual resource. And I know Sarah has mentioned that she's even run out at events, and so they continue to resupply us when we run low. But it's a really neat way to incorporate some education beyond our Katie Cares and Heroes in Action activities. So just wanted to tack that on to the good work they're doing over there.
We attended in October, so October to Halloween time, we attended the Orangewood Foundation Trunk or Treat. Those books were more popular than the candy and the little pencils and things that we had. So the children really enjoyed seeing that when they saw that. They were kind of like, is that homework? We're like, we promise it's not homework. It's an activity book. And they just lit up and were so excited about it. So that was very nice.
Did they make those available in any other language?
Currently, it's just English and Spanish. We're hoping, especially in Orange County, where we have really 5 threshold languages, that they will expand soon.
Okay. Have we made that request?
We've shared that with the author that runs the charity.
Okay. Wonderful. Any other comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
A second. Motion by Malo, second by Kane. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. I'm sorry, I should have asked if there was any opposition, but it's hard when there's only 3 of us up here. And 2 of them actively support the motion. So anyway, I'll try to remember to do that. Okay, regular business item number 2. Madam Clerk, do we have any public comments on this item?
No.
Okay. I'll have Alexandra present the foster program report.
So for our foster program this quarter, pretty on par with the season. We tend to be winding down with a lot of those kittens exiting our foster program. We start to see less of the underage kittens coming in because of the weather and the season and the cats out in the community not giving birth to those young kittens. And our team continues to educate the community about what to do when they are finding the underage kittens out there. But this quarter, we had 536 animals placed in our foster program, supported by 632 homes. Again, the reason why those numbers don't add up equally is because sometimes one foster animal is supported by multiple foster families throughout their journey with us in the foster program. So you can see here we have some transitional cats, and we had a mom and some puppies that came in. That one picture on the top left corner of the orange and white tabby, our team was creative in creating a cone for the kitten that was appropriate for the kitten by using a soft face mask.
I can see that now.
To keep it from getting to its incision site. So that was very exciting to see.
Very clever.
And then our foster to adopt program continues to go strong. We had 86 dogs participate in our foster to adopt program this quarter, supported by 99 homes, and we were able to successfully find adoption placement homes for 53 of those dogs. So that's really exciting, where the 14-day trial period garnered enough time for the family to get to know the animal, to get to know the dog, and to really make a responsible decision if this dog is going to be the right fit for their family or not. For the ones that have returned back into our care, we still collect a questionnaire about the dog's behavior and how they were in the home environment, so that when the dog returns into our care, our staff can provide any additional support for the animal, but equally share that great information to the next potential adopter. So one of the success stories I want to share this quarter is Micah and Bronx. So Micah and Bronx, they both came into our care under different circumstances. They both were here in our care for quite a long time. We had an interested party come in and wanted to foster to adopt Micah. So she took him home, and after the first day or so, she contacted us back and said, "Micah's a great dog, but you know, he's just a little shy, not really acclimating too well to the home environment. Was there a buddy that he had at the shelter that he got along with?" And because of our specially curated play groups, Micah did have a friend here. He got along very well with Bronx. They had a strong bond in play group, and we said, "Well, you can take Bronx as friend too." And that potential adopter said, "Yeah, why not?" So throughout their 14 days in the foster to adopt program, both dogs got to continue running in their big yard, and the foster realized their unique bond and adopted both. And we received updates of them running in the yard, and that's a little still shot of of both of the dogs there. But the video itself was them just romping around in the yard and having a good time, and so that was really great to see that through multiple avenues and programs that we have here at the shelter, through our foster to adopt program, through the way our shelter services team really knows the dogs and knows how to pair them in a play group to provide that enrichment. They got to continue that bond outside the shelter. So that
was. And Alex, do you want to share just a couple of sentences of how Micah came into our care?
So Micah came into our care through our field services team. He was from a unsuitable living condition home with about 12 other husky breeds. So very under-socialized, very dependent on another dog. And he went into a foster home before going into this foster to adopt. And we knew from that first experience that he had separation anxiety a little bit and was a little destructive. But who wouldn't be if you were never taught of how to be a dog? So that was Micah's background. Micah was the last one out of the group of 12 dogs to still be here and waiting for his forever home. So he's been very patient. Our staff and our volunteers have been working with him until that one fateful day where a person took a chance on him and took him in for a foster to adopt. And then our large dog foster program, it's more of a traditional dog foster program where participants are going in, fosters are going in, not with the initial intention of wanting to adopt, but just wanting to provide a sheltered dog a break. And so this quarter we had 11 dogs participate in the large dog foster program. Again, one of them being Nala. So Nala went to the Huntington Beach meeting, and then Nala was here at the shelter, and somebody signed up wanting to be a foster, gave us their kind of list of requirements and what their lifestyle at home was like, and we thought Nala would be a perfect fit. So with that, she got to enjoy and take naps during that bout of rainy days that we had, so that was really nice to see. And then somebody was interested in meeting with her from the photos and videos that they saw of her, and she went into a foster to adopt program with that person. And was she one of the ones that got adopted, or is she still in the foster to adopt?
I believe she's still in the foster to adopt.
So she's the one that's still in the foster to adopt. So this was a fairly kind of new transition into the foster to adopt. So we'll wait and see. Maybe we'll have a happy ending to report next quarter.
So Nala didn't originally go into the foster to adopt, but went into the staycation opportunity.
Correct.
And then the determination has been made to maybe adopt.
And then another party was interested in Nala.
Okay.
And she was a little bit on the fence, so then we transferred her from her foster home to that potential foster to adopt home. So they're still trialing it out, and we hope that it's a good fit.
And she's getting the support that you do in the foster to adopt program?
Correct. Our foster continues to get support from our foster team with supplies that they may need, weekly check-ins to make sure things are going well. For our foster to adopt, they're getting those automated emails. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Now, is that the end of an item? Okay. Because I know she's still up, so I would move to, that was number two. So I would entertain a motion to accept agenda discussion item number two.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Malo, seconded by Kane. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? There none, motion carries. Regular item business. Regular business item number three. Volunteer program.
So for our volunteer program this quarter, we had a total of 275 volunteers with on-site volunteer hours over 8,000 hours. Our volunteers continue to support us around the shelter with various activities. Exercising the animals, grooming, handling, training, socialization. So we're very grateful for their help. We have additional duties, including the Petco off-site cat adoption location. We have volunteers going to that site, cleaning and caring for the animals over there. When we have kittens over there right now, I don't think we have any kittens at Petco. But once the season ramps back up, that's another pathway for our animals to be seen and adopted. So to break it down, we had about 6,600 hours of volunteers with the dog walking and enrichment. We had 609 hours of cat assistance and enrichment, and then over 1,200 hours of volunteers with other activities around the shelter, which includes support services of sorting our donations and pantry items and providing rabbit enrichment and our groomers and the volunteers that help out in our clinic. So we're very grateful for all the various volunteers that we have around here, and we continue to connect with them through our volunteer coffee that we have this quarter. Sam Blankenship was our kennel manager, was the guest there, where we also hosted a volunteer roundtable as well, as a way to connect with our volunteers to keep them updated of what was going on around the shelter. Our director, Monica Schmidt, was in attendance, as well as our operations manager, Jamie Link. And again, that's just a great way to connect with them. And for this quarter, our volunteer of the month, we had for October, Tyler, and for November, Robin. In December, we had Justin as our volunteer of the month. We continue to recognize those volunteers who go above and beyond here for our shelter pets and our community. So, very happy to recognize them.
And just really quick, since we did touch on rabbit volunteers and enrichment in this section, Sam, I don't know if you could just give us maybe a couple of sentences on how y'all recently expanded some of the rabbit enrichment, and you've got a few volunteers helping with those initiatives.
Yeah, most of it was just how we were documenting it and how we were kind of communicating to the next handler that was going in there, which rabbit just had enrichment, which rabbit needs enrichment. So we just created like a little tracking system in there for them to utilize. We have an X-pin set up in there with a bunch of tunnels and enrichment toys, and so that they can come out of their hutch, go into there. They're monitored in there. We obtained two pretty serious rabbit volunteers lately, which has been nice because it's kind of niche, you know, and it's not, most people that come here are, that's not where they're gravitated towards. We get a lot of dog walkers and cats. So we just wanted to kind of capitalize on their excitement, and so just got a few little things here and there.
I have a couple questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was looking at usually the volunteers I see more senior citizen type, and then I saw this kid, Taylor. I mean, he looks like a young high school kid to me. Is he? Or?
Yeah, he's probably maybe early college. He started off in the nursery. That's where he was kind of putting most of his hours in at first, but he's expanded from them, and now he's helping out with shelter services and stuff. It's kind of like growing with the agency a little bit. So he seems like a young man who is interested in the industry. And so he's kind of trying to like touch in a little bit of all these different areas to see what really kind of piques his interest.
Right. I was thinking that it might be a good plan. I don't know if we have staff to do it, but it would be really nice to reach out to the high schools, unless there's an age problem there. I don't know legally. There is an age problem. Okay, because as veterinary hospitals, we always get high school kids that love animals and they want to, you know, but we have a problem with insurance. I was thinking maybe the county is so big we can get away with it, but it's an insurance. Because I was thinking we reach out to veterinary clubs or something at these schools and see if we can get more young people, but yeah. Is that not possible?
So our age volunteering with the animals is 18. So we do get some seniors that start because they turn 18 while they're still in high school. We get a lot of college kids. We do have some high school clubs that come and support Pantry as a group. We have some honor societies and some animal-related clubs that have supported that. Garden Grove High School is one of the high schools that we work with that have been out multiple times for that. We also offer internships through some of the local college programs as well as the vet tech schools. And so we do have some interns that serve in the clinic, specifically folks who are just starting in their vet tech career, starting to take classes, so they're getting some practical experience along the way. And we have interns, usually early college age, that help with foster and our communication efforts, help them with social media. And I think you guys typically have sometimes two or three interns at Foster, right, Alan?
Correct. And they're very helpful, especially during peak kitten season, and they get the insight on the neonatal care of those animals and kind of an insight on the difference between shelter medicine and private medicine.
If there is a way to reach out to high schools in which we could ask for volunteers with that caveat that
right.
They have to be age 18, I would think that would be a marvelous idea. if you need some connections with AHT schools, I know someone who runs an AHT school in Garden Grove. If that would be helpful, you can contact me. Thank you.
Kim, did you have any questions? I had one question. This quarter that we just finished is a holiday intensive quarter. Do we see a drop in the number of volunteer hours for this quarter and that it begins to pick up again, or is the drop sort of in the current quarter because everybody's burned out? Do you know, or is there a drop that's noticeable?
What we see is it's a bit sporadic on the individual days when people are maybe traveling. And it's interesting because in our volunteer Facebook group, they'll actually communicate out. If Mary Evans is an example, right? She'll post and say, I'm going to be gone for 2 days. I need somebody to walk my potty dogs in the PM. Who'll take my shift?
Okay.
So there's some intercommunication where they're recruiting other volunteers to step up when they're traveling. The biggest drop we see this time of year is more related to kitten season. Our nursery is empty right now, and so that's where we see that huge decline in cat volunteer hours.
Okay.
Because last quarter and the quarter previous to that, you would have seen double and even maybe potentially triple.
Right. I knew the numbers were just...
Yeah.
So, okay.
But a lot of that is driven by if there are no baby kittens to clean up after.
Yeah.
The kitten nursery volunteers get it. They call it their off-season. They get a little bit of a break. Donna books all her cruises during this time of year, and then really they'll start back. It'll depend on when we start getting babies in, but probably sometime between late April or late March into April,
those numbers will
pick back up. So even this next quarter, you'll see that they'll be lower than.
Okay, all right. So it's not so much that people are distracted elsewhere; it's that we don't have the kittens.
Right. There may be a little distraction, they're helping to
self-schedule
other folks. And
yeah.
If you do this, I'll be back in town this day, I'll take your shift. And
okay.
They work really good together as a team.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Are you also doing the adoption for me?
Do we need a... Did we accept
motions
for that?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Moved and seconded, whatever item number that is.
Item number...
Three?
Four.
Okay. So that's been any opposition or abstention? Seeing none, it's approved. And now we move to the adoption partner program. Flip too many.
I think
item four.
It's three, not four.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, and lastly, with our Adoption Partners program, again, with the season winding down with the number of animals we have in our care, we were still able to pull off a transport through the support of Greater Good Charities. Greater Good Charities reached out to us and said, hey, the Pacific Northwest Partners, they're looking for some kittens. Their kitten season, because of the weather, tends to be non-existent. So around this time of the year, we still had quite a bit of kittens in October. So we were able to transport 48 kittens and 5 dogs out to the Pacific Northwest. And the efforts required were from the planning to the collaboration. Staff and volunteers came to prepare the crates in this room here, actually, and because how the crates have to be put together and how they have to be labeled was very intricate. And thanks to everybody's teamwork, we were able to get those animals out into their forever homes. So we're very excited about that. And then our partner adoptions this quarter, we were able to place over 700 animals with nonprofit rescue groups, local veterinarians, municipal and humane organizations in the area. And with that, we sent out over 250 communication postings to our partners and our networkers, advising them of the animals in need of rescue placement or just the animals that we had. Sometimes we get a peek in certain types of animals, whether that be rabbits or roosters. We reach out out to the specific partners that we have that we know may be able to take those animals in. We continue to have our medical pet program, but this quarter we were very fortunate that the animals who needed that advanced medical care were pulled and helped by our rescue partners. So that's one of the things where if we identify an animal needing extensive medical care, we like to reach out to our rescue partners first to see if they have the resources and means to help before entering that animal into the medical pets program and taking on the cost of that surgery here. And then lastly, for our success story, with our adoption partners, they're either we onboard new ones by like word of mouth with one rescue, kind of reaching out to that group saying, hey, like partner with OC Animal Care, or sometimes through our postings because they get shared widely through social media. We don't really, whether that's through Facebook or other means, other rescue organizations, even local and out of state, reach out to us. And we had one dog in particular. His name was Snoopy. He was surrendered by his family, and despite our best efforts, he just wasn't acclimating very well to the shelter environment. So we had put a posting out there reaching out to rescue partners to see if anybody had the resources and a quiet home for him to acclimate and readjust. And a new partner reached out. We verified their 501c3 standing and that they were a group in good standing. And we were able to release Snoopy to them. And in December, they gave us a happy update that Snoopy found his forever home with a nice couple that had a quiet home, and he was able to live his life out with them. And that group now continues to step up and pull animals from our shelter. So that's very nice to see that social media gets the word out there and that they continue their partnership with us.
Any questions for me?
I have one question. Do we track how many of the animals that we transfer out are adopted? And I'm thinking about, okay, has Frida been adopted, or do we, once they're transferred out, it's up to the home, you know, the agency to track that, or do we follow up?
Generally, once they are transferred out, it's up to the agency to, if they wanted to report back to us.
Okay.
And it's nice to get those happy updates.
Right.
But sometimes some of the organizations that we're working with are so large that they will know where the animal is, but they just don't have the opportunity and resources to circle back with them.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I'm sure that some staff, you know, if you've had a dog for 5 months, you might want to know that it's been adopted in the new place, but understand. Okay. Are we ready for...
And I'll just say thank you to Alex for filling in and being Tammy today, but
yes.
Tammy will be back at the next meeting. Tammy's enjoying some vacation time this week, so but we'll have her back next quarter.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So I would entertain a motion to accept item number 4.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Motion made by Mallow and seconded by Kane. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries. And this time I'll have Monica share the director's comments.
All right, thank you. So you've had a busy quarter. Holidays hit us just as well. We have a lot of people that go out on vacation and different things, but within that time we've also had some people join our team that we're really excited about. So like Jonathan, our new PIO and community liaison, as well as Denise, our new communications manager, who joined us in January. In addition, I think I mentioned this at the last meeting, but we recently revamped an old recruitment, and it's been over 20 years since we've recruited at an animal control officer lateral position. We typically recruit at an officer trainee level. They come in, it can be 6 to 8 months of intensive training, much like a sheriff academy or a fire academy. And decades ago, there was a lateral recruitment on the books. It was something we were able to update the recruitment bulletin for and give that a try. With the idea thinking, like a police officer lateral, you can go from Anaheim to Huntington Beach or vice versa, one PD to another, and maybe it's 2 or 3 months of onboarding to learn our codified ordinances from where they came from, and learn how exactly we do it, but they already have the core basic skills. And so we ran that recruitment at the same time we opened up a recruitment for a trainee class. And I'm excited to share we were able to recruit 3 experienced ACO officers from various agencies across the state. They all came from within the state of California. So they are familiar with state codes and just need to learn our county ordinances. And they started last Friday, all 3 of them. So I'm really excited. Our field training officers worked diligently to revamp and spool down that onboarding program to focus just on our agency and what they need to learn about our area, where those officers will be out on the streets running calls much faster than our upcoming training class. So that's really exciting and kind of a refresh. Sam's team, we're actually fully staffed with animal care attendants, as well as senior animal care attendants. So they're feeling good over there and fully staffed, and that's great for that team. The other thing we started in December is the Shelter Playgroup Alliance training. It's a very intense training for our staff, and we're actually doing 2 cohorts of it. So the first cohort began in December. Sam's part of that cohort. Then with the next cohort, the other half of staff beginning in March, and then Sam and Alex will be working together with Dawn, of course, incorporating her, but the two of them will be working on a version of that training for select volunteers to then be able to go through to assist with. The training not only includes playgroup training, build our staff skill sets, but it also includes quite a bit on just dog behavior and de-escalation and just different tricks almost that you can use when you take a dog first out of their kennel. And so something as simple as towels with treats wrapped inside of them scattered across a yard where the dog can exhibit some natural behaviors in going roaming and foraging each one of those spots. Sam talks about how you can just see like the stress leave their body, and what they've taken from that in addition to play groups is now with some of our maybe more exuberant dogs, before they go for their meet and greet with the public, they'll actually do one of those decompression techniques where they'll take them out for 2 or 3 minutes and let them sniff around and scuffle in the towel, and then when they go into that meet and greet, they're a little calmer, they're a little more relaxed, and show better their true nature to that family, and feel like they can actually take the time to go sit by that person rather than just wanting to run zoomies. So it's actually been carrying over into multiple areas of our shelter team, so we're really excited for our staff to be receiving that training. It is quite intense, and so Sam is actually having the team at times, take an hour here in our off season, and 5 or 6 of you watch the next lesson together, because a lot of it is virtual. And they had a 3-day immersion training here on campus with the folks from Shelter Playgroup Alliance in December. So pretty exciting news for that team that I wanted to share with. Forecasted we were having that program come on board, but wanted to share an update of where we're at. our Dog Day Out program. I want to give kudos to Alex and Mikey. Those of you that have volunteered in the shelter, you remember Michael Hoops from, he was an animal care attendant for a number of years. He's been an intake education coordinator over in our intake and diversion program for quite some time, and he's now working with Alex. They're developing our Dog Day Out program we talked about last time, and with hopes of hard launching that pilot program in March. That team had a really, they have a great idea to actually do a soft launch the 2 weeks prior for just volunteers to run through the program as a soft launch and then launching to the community. They're going to earmark some specific spots as part of that Dog Day Out program for just volunteers to sign up to take dogs out so that they don't have to be in the main batch of volunteers and public. So volunteers will have some spots set aside just for volunteer sign up as well. So we're really excited for that. They have worked really hard. And a lot, I wish we could just turn a switch and have a new program, but there's a lot that goes into that behind the scenes, mapping it out, knowing how we're going to protect our pets, set people up for success, protect our participants, protect staff, just safe from a safety angle, making sure we're setting them up for success and having those tools and reminders. Like, you can't go to a dog park with a dog you just met. That's probably not the smartest thing. So they're creating a lot of education tools for when people apply to participate or sign in to pick up their dog that day. They've got supplies all the way down to a safety seatbelt for when the dog's riding in your car. So it's really been well thought out. They've put a lot of work into it, and we're excited to be launching that at the end of this quarter for our community. And then in the next meeting, they'll be able to bring a lot of that information to share with you of how that kickoff for the pilot project went. So that's really exciting. This is really just like an interesting, sometimes you have no control over things, such as we've had a contract with Good Pup virtual training for quite some time. It's funded through a grant for virtual training. And in November, we were notified that Good Pup was absorbed by a different company, and they were no longer going to offer that virtual training in the capacity that a lot of shelters were using it. They were absorbed by Rover, which is taking that company in a whole different direction. And really almost pushing people to find a trainer locally rather than pushing the virtual model. So we had to start looking for a replacement, and we reached out and also talked to our friends over at Irvine Animal Center because they were using Good Pup as well. And both of our shelters are now in the final stages of a new procurement contracts with Wags and Wiggles. For ours, it'll specifically be a virtual replacement for that Good Pup, but other than a couple of months lack of coverage due to something completely out of our hands, we'll be able to then continue that program soon. And it didn't just impact us, because like I said, Irvine, as well as many other shelters, were using Good Pup. And it's sad to see that resource for shelters go by the wayside, but we're excited to have a replacement fairly soon. Just an interesting fact that I wanted to share and give props to our veterinary team that we don't always get to talk about in this community outreach-focused meeting. I was recently at the Cal Animals CEO Forum, and Dr. Scarlett from SFSVCA was sharing some insight. They conducted a survey of over 100 shelters across the state of California, and one of the most interesting facts she felt they came away with was shelters who have a veterinarian on staff, whether that be one, four like us, or more, actually had a significant lower length of stay for the dogs in their care, to the tune of the average length of stay across the state that they were being reported to was just under 22 days if there was a veterinarian on staff. And if there was not a veterinarian on staff, it was closer to 49 days length of stay. And so we always talk about all the things. Not one thing is the only thing we do for length of stay, but one of the huge things we have as a benefit is we have a full veterinary team. We have four vets, we have RVTs, to support them, and we also have vet tech assistance. And it does, it's one of many things that contribute to us always trying to decrease our length of stay, including Sam and Nicole's work with behavior assessments, and they've actually been able to decrease the time animal dogs specifically are spending in the TLC program before being able to convert. And by getting down that length of stay during that time when they're not available yet, it actually ends up decreasing their overall length of stay as well. And so it's lots of little pieces that all add up, including our vet team that we don't always get to talk about. So I just wanted to kind of give them, they're not in here, but give them some acknowledgments, because some of our sister shelters across the state don't have that resource that we do, and sometimes it maybe gets overlooked a little bit. So, and that's it for our director's report.
I have some questions. When we get, I think it's wonderful. I sit on a commission with the police chief in Garden Grove, and one of the big things about getting crossovers from other departments is you don't have to spend the money in the training, and that's a significant thing. It's really for communities. But are we able, when someone wants this the crossover, which is to our advantage, are we allowed to ask questions like, why have they, can we see personnel records from the last year or 2 years? And are we allowed to ask those questions? And is that information supplied?
We have very scripted questions of what we can ask their former employer. So that does not typically provide you with a review of their previous evaluations or county or city record where they were at, so to speak. But we do have an HR supplied form of what we're allowed to ask their reference. And then we have a certain amount of references to cover a certain number of years of most recent work history that we also have to catalog. And then, of course, we're able to ask some of very job-specific questions that help us give us insight into how they would approach certain field calls as it relates to a variety of topics, like a stray up from how would you approach a stray at large to how would you identify the signs of animal cruelty, and how would you conduct an investigation?
So you have the same kind of problems that we have when we try to hire
people.
We can't specifically ask. Okay,
yes.
So
we also have to follow those hiring laws.
Being large may allow us to escape these things, but obviously it does not.
It does not.
Okay, so my next question was, do you have a general feeling of why these folks left their jobs to come here? And
yeah.
What would they be?
It's often a variety, and so sometimes, for example, you might see somebody who left the animal welfare world for a year or two to try something else and really missed it more than they thought they would and would like to come back to the industry. Sometimes you might, the same reasons other people relocate, I was from the area, or I have aging parents in the area, I want to get back to this area, and I'm living in Northern California, or 2 hours.
So no one specific thing? Like
no
one.
No,
it's more vacations. Or, mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, it really seems to really track and follow the same of anybody else looking to relocate, or just change jobs.
Okay.
Sometimes we are fortunate that our ACO series here at the county does pay higher than some shelters. When we compare, and so that could be, but I don't think anybody's going to say that in an interview. But typically they follow some standard. Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Good question. Kim, anything?
No, I think it's all terrific.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do think, I'm pleased to hear that we are full on animal attendance.
Sam is too.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. Do we, or does the county allow, or accept applications at any time, even though you're full and you don't have an active recruitment on? Do they accept
applications anytime somebody wants to come in.
Oh.
I really want to do that. I want to get my application in. I know they're full, but...
It's not quite that open.
Okay.
The way the county process works is when we open a recruitment, say for animal care attendant or animal control officer or anything else, you open a recruitment, it's for a set number of days. Once it closes, then a list is established of those who meet the minimum qualifications for the role. Through a variety of testing outside of us, HR-related processes, they can develop what they call an A-list and a B-list. And that's sometimes just based on scoring on tests. And then what happens from there is once we hire off that list itself stays active for a year. And so, for example, if an animal care attendant came and said, hey, I got offered a promotion in another department at your agency, I'm excited, but Sam, here's the start date HR game, or, you know, anything else, we would be able to go back to that list to any candidate that hasn't been hired yet but met qualifications, and sometimes even just move to a meet and greet because we've already interviewed them. We do have rules we have to follow. If you're going to do interviews again, you have to interview all. You can't pick and choose. But it's thankfully we have the list active. It's not quite the same as just having an ongoing open recruitment, but it does give us the ability not to have to run a full recruitment. And Sam actually recently backfilled a vacancy off of the previous list.
Okay.
So it does expedite it significantly.
Okay. And sort of in the same vein, if someone is interested in and hasn't applied yet, is not a list or anything, is there a way that they can get on a notification list? Or?
Through the government jobs website.
Okay.
They do send a little, like, here are the current openings that fit what you've indicated you want to receive emails about. It doesn't come specifically from the County of Orange, but it does come from governmentjobs.com. And then they're also able actually to continue to just update the profile they have in there and quick, you know, if it's been a year and they want to say, oh, I want to add some skills I've learned.
Oh, okay.
They don't have to redo an application each
time. Oh, okay.
And so it does make it an easier process if you're applying to any government job anywhere once you have your profile set.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Any other questions?
Oh, how is the new play area surface doing?
Well, outside of the unprecedented rains, which, I mean, in fairness, the parks flooded, the canyons flooded, the Sheriff Academy next door to us had standing water for almost a week. I mean, it was a significant amount of water, two rain bands in a row. Outside of that, it's done much better than when it was just the dirt. The organic matter does absorb faster than dirt does, of course. We actually saw ours dissipating faster than the Sheriff Academy behind us with their big open field. Luckily, they weren't doing any night training out there during that week. But outside of that, the final pieces of agility have been installed, so that's really exciting. If you haven't had a chance to walk out there, the main play yard especially, it has not only the stairs that they climb up and can perch on, you can do some training on, which is nice because a lot of people have stairs where they live to train a dog how to walk up the stairs and not freak out on you. But it has the agility, like the jump agility, it has the weave poles out there, it has a few different tunnels spread out, a place square where you can work on place and teaching a dog, and just a variety of different, and each of the 4 yards with natural substrate in the behind buildings 5 and 6 also have agility equipment all installed now as well. And so it's a little more complicated. We don't have any in the turf yards themselves because obviously there have to be some installation processes that are complicated by the fact that has a turf set up. But all of our other yards now have new agility equipment. We had not had new equipment since we moved in 2018. So just, you know, being out in the elements, it's obviously aged, and we're really excited. And we have a survey going out for staff and volunteers that utilize those yards. We used three different blends of the organic material, and so we want to hear their feedback of which one that we've heard verbally from several people who have a favorite, but you know, collectively as a group, we'd like to hear which of the three that they think works the best, and which one they think the dogs enjoy the best, because the dogs can't tell us. So, yeah. And I know Sam has kind of his some of his observations as well that we're definitely gonna want to hear from him and his team. But if you haven't seen it, I do encourage you to walk out. If we've heard from a variety of folks who really had positive things to say about the change and the update in the remodel or rebeautification project.
And the agency that we work with within the county, are they supportive, still supportive? Are they thinking it's a hassle?
No, they're very supportive, and they're able to give us the product for free. We're really grateful. Irvine Animal Care Center, as well as Peninsula Humane, both use similar products, and so we were able to tour both sites, and they had good luck, so we knew going into it we had some proven installation programs that we could take a look at, and waste and recycling, it's made right here locally from your green waste that you put out in your trees, and we're really happy to have that support, and that's money we don't have to spend on ground cover. It's money we can continue to invest into our shelter, field, and veterinary, and the rest of our services we provide. So, it's a good partnership.
Anything else? Okay, we come to the time in our meeting now for public comments. Members of the public may address the OC Animal Care community regarding any topic within the subject matter jurisdiction of the advisory committee. And no action shall be taken on topics not appearing on this agenda. Speakers will have 3 minutes to address the advisory committee, and the clerk will run up the timer and announce when your time has expired. Do we have any public comment requests?
Michael?
Thank you. I look forward to hearing more about the implementation of all the new programs at the next meeting. It all sounds exciting. I'll make some quick suggestions on things that came up. Committee member Milo mentioned about recruiting volunteers in high schools. I might add to that community colleges. That might be a good place. More people over 18, maybe more relaxed atmosphere than if you go at UCI. So it might be a good place to get some very young and fit volunteers to walk our big dogs here. Committee member Cowan asked about transfers out and tracking, and nationwide, the general pattern is shelters do not track animals after they transfer them to another organization unless that organization voluntarily reports back, in which case it's still an informal thing. It's not entered in a database generally. And it is a matter of some controversy, especially when those hoarding cases come up, of rescues that collected animals but didn't care for them. But that is the general national pattern. That tracking just doesn't exist. Would be nice if it did, but it doesn't. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about managed intake. So at some point, the shelter transitioned from open intake to managed intake. And I don't think that's inherently a good thing or a bad thing. It depends on the circumstances. It is something that many shelters do, either as a standing policy or from time to time, depending on, you know, where they are with respect to capacity. However, I think it would have been helpful to do that a little more transparently. And look, I understand that the moment you bring that up, there will be people that will take that negatively, but there will also be people who may see the positive side if they, you know, if that explanation is put forward to the public. And if that transparency doesn't happen, then people notice it kind of indirectly and there's speculation. So I would very much like to hear more about what the shelter is looking for in this managed intake mode. And I repeat, personally, I do not consider it inherently bad or inherently good. It just depends on what circumstances drive it and how the shelter intends to use that tool of not being open intake and not be, automatically taking in any animal that's brought in from the jurisdictions that it serves. So my argument there, again, is not on the managed intake for or against, it's for more conversation on that. Thank you.
Any other speaker requests?
Margo?
Recently, I volunteered actually looking after four bottle-fed kittens, which is really hard work, and I admire anybody that does it. It was really rewarding, and I was very sad to give the kittens back. In fact, I was thinking of adopting one of them, but they've grown up to the weight that they should have been, and I had a lot of help. Anyway, I had help and was thinking of adopting them, and they actually were all adopted the next day, which showed that I'd done the right thing, socialising and everything for them. So I'm very proud. I haven't received any more emails, so I assume that you didn't want any help with kittens. So I was surprised that I haven't received an email. Maybe I've been taken off the list or something. But I was concerned that the shelter advertises that all supplies are given to you as for the foster. And this certainly wasn't the case. I found out you just get given stuff at the beginning and then you have to pay for the stuff yourself, which wasn't clear. And I was busy running around trying to find the right milk formula. In fact, I had to go an hour or so away to try and get it. And then the same litter and things like that. And I think it needs to be made clear. And I think I actually emailed. Monica, to say that I think you should just advertise what you get so that people like me are not surprised. Really, that's it. I never heard back, though.
What did we give to foster?
So Alex, I do believe Alex did reach out to you since that's the program she oversees. So I'll have Alex answer that question because it would have been the same information Alex provided to Margo.
Yeah, so with our underage animals coming in, we supply an amount that we have on hand. Sometimes that's donation-based, sometimes we are supplementing in that formula. We advise our fosters that we will provide that formula throughout the time when the kitten is still a bottle baby, because how hard sometimes that formula can be found and come by. We also have it on our website. Last season, we were able to work with our communications team and create a quick tutorial or what to expect when fostering a large dog or kittens with us. And we do put it in there that we provide supplies that we have on hand based on donation. Because of the thousands of underage animals that are coming into our care, it's not financially sustainable to be able to provide a can of food per day per kitten throughout its stay in our foster program. A lot of our fosters have many kittens in a litter that they are fostering, so we are very fortunate and thankful for our fosters to be giving their time and a lot of times their finances to support that kitten while they're in foster. But we do encourage an open door policy for our fosters to communicate with us, like if they are having any troubles to find food, so that we can look at our donated food or if it's essential for that animal's care, because they're on a very specific diet to work in creative ways on how to procure that item.
Okay, I'm not sure, formulas particularly, do we provide that throughout the time that they're being bottle fed?
Yes, we use a formula called Foster Care. There are many different formula brands out there. but we usually, because the neonatal kittens, their systems are so sensitive when they're so young, we like to keep them on the same formula, and that's where we'll provide that.
So if someone who is a foster can come in and pick up additional formula from you as they need it?
Correct.
Okay. But they might not be able to get canned food?
Correct.
Okay. I think that Margo mentioned litter. Do we require a certain kind of litter?
We generally use the non-clumping litter here for reasons, because little kittens are curious and we don't want them ingesting clumping litter. So we do use non-clumping litter, and we'll provide like a gallon-sized bag to get started with. But there's other substrates too that can be used, like shredded newspaper or pine litter, other types of litter that are safe that can be found at a local pet store.
So we just ask that they don't use clumping litter?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
And just to confirm, we supply the bottles or syringes if the kittens are having trouble with the bottles still?
Correct, yeah. There's different types of nipples out there for bottles. The generic ones that you get when you buy a bottle, sometimes it's not the best. There's a type of nipple called a Miracle nipple, and that one alone is around $15. Comparable substitutes out there that we try to procure that's less than that. And we encourage fosters to disinfect it properly, and they can reuse it many times. As long as the kitten is not biting it off, by the time the kitten's teeth come in, they should be on wet food. So we encourage fosters to disinfect it, and they can reuse it. But if it's no longer feasible, we will provide that nipple too, because again, it's very essential for the animal's world.
I know that fostering neonates is very time consuming and emotion consuming. So thank you very much for stepping up to do that. And we'll see if we can't check and see the communications on that. Thank you. Any other comments?
No.
No other public comments? Okay, that concludes that. Advisory Committee member comments.
I'd like to thank Michael for the suggestion about community colleges. I can't believe that it didn't even register. But that's really great, because we can get by the insurance problem there, the age-related, Marvel said it. The other thing I think about, and again, I don't know if we have staff to do it, but it seems to me within corporations today in America are really thinking about their public relations and things like that. Do we actively solicit donations? Like, when I was in practice, Nestle's used to be the company that made a lot of nursing products and so forth. Do we send letters out and say, gee, you know, we could use some help with donated material, especially if it's dated and stuff like that? It would be a marvelous idea, because we could then, you know, they get good PR and we would save operational expenses and dollars we could use somewhere else. I don't know if we do that, and if anybody even has to make that suggestion, but it would be lovely if we could get them a chance to get good PR. And then lastly, the thing I wanted to say is, I can't remember who I stole it from, but somebody once said that you make a living from what you do, but you make a life from what you give. And I don't know how we've attracted the tremendous number of hours of volunteers that we get each time we have one of these meetings, and I look at it and I'm absolutely blown away. And I don't know how we do it. Kudos to whoever is in charge of doing this. But it's just so marvelous to find so many human beings out there that are willing to give their time. And someone ought to mention that, and someone should thank our employees if, in fact, they are the ones doing it. It's incredible. I sit here and I'm impressed by that every day at the meeting we ever have. Just wanted to share that.
Okay, many people.
just keep up the good work.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with how things are going. I also just want to give a shout out to Michael. We got some copies of the incredible work, your statistical research. I have to admit...
Another one coming on Friday.
Okay. I have to admit that the most recent one rekindled panic attacks from my statistics classes. So I'm not sure how much I got out of that one, but it was good. But I did find the one on the adoption rates with what we were doing, I guess you would call it, managed adoption times and more open public access. So I appreciate seeing that sort of laid out. But I just wanted to acknowledge that, and the simpler the better for me, Michael. But I love what we're doing. Welcome aboard, Jonathan. Excited to that. I'm glad to hear that the kennel attendant is full.
Mazel tov.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah. And that we've actually gone to some lateral transfer opportunities for the ACOs. I think that's great, because it is very time intensive to bring someone up to speed, because we don't want untrained animal control officers out. So great job. And anything else, then I will ask for, just announce it concludes today's agenda, and we'll meet the next time, April 22nd, 11:30 here. And the meeting is now adjourned. Whatever time it is.
12:50.
It's just outside of my view. So
12:50.
Okay. Thank you all. Anyway.
No, I work with that. You can chat.